commandment that we are to follow is to love the Lord your God. That comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's called the Shema in Hebrew worship. Shema is just a Hebrew word for hear, H-E-A-R. And that's where it starts, is Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. And Jesus is asked this question, what's the foremost commandment? And he says the same thing, and then he says, and the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But I want us to stop and examine this morning, what does the opposite of loving God mean? And for us this morning, we're going to talk about two different words here, which again are very different words, even though I think sometimes we might think of them in very similar ways. But is the true opposite of loving God, is it hate? Is it hate? We see this is perhaps the most common term used in opposition of God. Let's examine some passages here. For instance, Numbers 10, verse 35. Numbers 10, verse 35. Then it came about when the ark set out that Moses said, rise up, O Yahweh, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you. And again, this is a very common use of the term as it pertains to sort of being the opposite of God or being the enemy of God is those that hate him. What about Deuteronomy chapter 7? Deuteronomy chapter 7. We're going to start in verse 9. Know therefore, Yahweh your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to the thousandth generation with those who love him and keep his commandments, but repays those who hate him to their faces, to destroy them. He will not delay with him who hates him, he will repay him to his face. Therefore, you shall keep the commandment and the statutes and the judgments which I am commanding you today to do them. Then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that Yahweh your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness, which he swore to your forefathers. He will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your ground, your grain and your new wine and your oil, the increase of your herd and the young of your flock in the land which he swore to your forefathers to give you. You shall be blessed above all peoples. There will be no male or female barren among you or among your cattle. Yahweh will remove from you all the sickness which he put on you, which he will not put on you, any of the harmful diseases of Egypt which you have known, but he will lay them on all who hate you. So there's sort of this interesting pattern that is starting to emerge, right? So we see that there is this concept of love and hatred being opposites of one another. And I think what we're going to find is this is, while it's the most common perhaps in the entire Bible, it's most common in the Old Testament, is this connection of hate and love being opposites. Let's continue reading here. Second Chronicles chapter 19. Second Chronicles 19, verse 1. Then Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned in safety to his house in Jerusalem. Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, Should you help the wicked and love those who hate Yahweh and so bring wrath on yourself before Yahweh? But there is some good in you, for you have removed the Asherah from the land, and you have set your heart to seek God. So Jehoshaphat lived in Jerusalem and went out again among the people from Beersheba to the hill country of Ephraim and brought them back to Yahweh, the God of their fathers. So note then, when he's questioned about allying himself with those who hate God, there's sort of this underlying question. Do you hate God? Right? Should you help the wicked and love those who hate Yahweh? And so again, there's this opposition here. So what does he do? He responds in doing good things for God, bringing the people back to God when he is accused of hating the Lord. Proverbs 31 in verse 6, it says, I hate those who regard vain idols, but I trust in Yahweh. And that's one of the reasons why we chose Proverbs 3, but we're not going to get to Proverbs 3 quite yet. That's going to come later. But notice how the opposite of hate here is actually trust. Right? I hate those who are against the Lord, but I trust in the Lord. What about Psalm 139? Psalm 139. Psalm 139, verse 21. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Yahweh? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies. Or what about Matthew chapter 6? Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. So there's this constant that we're seeing. I would say hate is a strong contender here for what the opposite of loving God is. Would it be hating God? But there's another idea that I want you to think about this morning. And again, the Bible actually doesn't, it never uses this word, but the concept appears in a few places. But what if the opposite of love is actually apathy? We were reading from Deuteronomy chapter 7 earlier, and we stopped at verse 15. We stopped in verse 15. But I want you to note the very next verse. Verse 16. You shall consume all the peoples whom Yahweh your God will deliver you to you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for that would be a snare to you. You can hate and pity someone at the same time. You cannot pity someone and be apathetic at the same time. I want you to notice that as he's been talking about hating God and those who are opposite of God, then he says, you shouldn't pity those who you're about to destroy. So again, I would say that another way for him to say this is, don't love the people I'm about to send you to destroy. Don't try to be like them. Have no pity on them. Because if you pity them, you might end up sympathizing with them. What about 2 Samuel chapter 18? 2 Samuel 18. We're going to start in verse 1. Then David numbered the people who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. David sent the people out, one third under the command of Joab, one third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. And the king said to the people, I myself will surely go out with you also. Okay, so what's going on here? Maybe we need some context. So this is where Absalom has tried to take over the nation from David. And Absalom is David's son here. But then look at what it says in verse 3. How are Absalom's people, those loyal to Absalom, going to treat David and his people? But the people said, you should not go out, for if we indeed flee, they will not care about us. Even if half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us, therefore now it is better that you be ready to help us from the city. Note that. It says they will not care about us even if half of us die. I would say that that would make this concept a very strong contender for the opposite of love. If I'm not going to love someone, then perhaps I shouldn't care anything about them. If you look over at Hebrews 8, here's another one. I'm reading a quote in Hebrews chapter 8, which is actually from Jeremiah 31. However, if you go to Jeremiah 31 and read this quote, it's not going to read the same, okay? Because what you are going to read, if you turn to Jeremiah 31, is the Masoretic translation or the Latin Vulgate translation of the Old Testament. However, the Hebrew writer is taking from the Septuagint translation, which has a slight difference here. If you start with me in verse 8 of Hebrews chapter 8. For finding fault with them, he, that's God, says, behold, days are coming, says Yahweh, when I will effect a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant which I made with their fathers on the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt. For they did not continue in my covenant, and I did not care for them, says Yahweh. So he's not caring for them because they've broken his covenant. If you go to Jeremiah 31, the very verse, it says, they did not continue in my covenant even though I was a husband to them. Again, that's the Masoretic version, whereas the Septuagint says, I did not care for them. So notice that when they broke his covenant, what does God do? He stops caring for the people. What about Job 3? Job is going to talk about the day of his birth here. And I find it interesting the way that he speaks of God here. Afterward, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth and said, let the day perish on which I was to be born, that the night which said a boy is conceived, may that day be darkness. Let not God above care for it, nor light shine on it. And that would obviously be a day in which there would be much rejoicing. But he says, God should no longer care for that day. Again, he's speaking hyperbolically there. But notice the curse that he's pronouncing upon the day of his birth. And the last passage that we're going to look at for apathy is Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4, beginning in verse 37. There arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. Jesus himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. They woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he got up and rebuked the wind and the sea and said, hush, be still. The wind died down, it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, why are you afraid? How is it that you have no faith? They became very much afraid and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him? I like that he makes this connection with their fear and faith to the question that they actually asked. Right? The natural response would be something more akin to, of course I care, right? That might be because of the question that they've asked, Right? That would be more in line with what you'd expect of the response. But Jesus responds about their faith. But note the question that they actually ask. Do you not care? And of course, God cares. The fact is, they weren't really in any danger. Yes, there was danger all around them, but they have the Son of God with them. Is their boat really going to go down in the storm? Because they have the Son of God. But note that they're asking if God has any care left for them. And when we think about these words, hate or apathy, well, hate has a difference and a similarity to love. The difference between the two of these is that hate is a repulsive emotion. It means you want to push away, whereas love is an attractive emotion. So in that way, the opposites of repulsion and attraction, yes, they're opposites, but they're both in very intense emotions toward something or someone. For instance, with Tamar, one of David's daughters, we see that another one of David's sons, he has this intense love for her, which really is lust, but he has this love for her. That's what he keeps saying, is he's yearning for her. And once he manages to have his way with her, it says that he immediately hated her. There's this very fine line because they're both very intense emotions. And it's actually quite easy to cross that line sometimes. However, apathy, there's really only a difference. You see, with apathy, there is no emotion at all. And you might say, well, they're both emotional states, but that's a bit of a misnomer. It's a bit of an incorrect statement, because apathy is no emotion at all. So if you're going to call that an emotional state, showing no emotion, okay, I suppose. But love is this very intense emotion, whereas apathy means I don't have any emotion towards you at all. And so for this question, I lean towards apathy, but I want you to think about it from a slightly different perspective. Which is easier? Is it easier to turn a hateful person into a loving person, right? Or to, if you hate something, to suddenly start loving it? Which is easy? Is that easier? Or simply convincing someone that they need to care? Which do you think is harder? In my experience and in my observation, the second one is far harder. Because you don't care. You have no emotional connection. And so to try to convince someone to care, you have to get them to understand that they have to have an emotional attachment in the first place. That is far harder. I've seen a lot, either in my work with people or in the work that I've seen done with other people, there are those who have an intense hatred of God, but then as soon as you break it down into why do they hate God and you deal with that, oftentimes you have someone who turns the page and suddenly they become one of the greatest advocates for God. Usually hatred and love, this is something that they've done a lot of psychological studies on, and what we're starting to notice in our data is that most of the people that have a vehement hatred toward God, which usually plays out in staunch militant atheism, that there is almost always, there is a moment in their early history, whether it's their childhood or their adolescent history, where they had an expectation of God that didn't follow through. And usually it's that they expected God to help them with something. Majority of cases is preventing someone from dying. And God didn't. And so when they reached out in their greatest time of need and didn't get the response that they were hoping for or expecting, suddenly there's a switch that's been flipped in their head. And suddenly they have a hatred for God. And usually you have to overcome that moment in their history. But if you can help them understand God and his place in the events that transpired, you often get people who will turn. However, it's so much harder to convince someone that they need to care about God in the first place. And while we're talking about this in reference to our relationship with God, this actually plays out in our relationships with our fellow men, with our fellow humans. We forget that we have to care. We talked last Sunday night, about how emotions are important to a Christian and the Christian way of life. And this is sort of after I preached that lesson, I started thinking of this lesson. And how when it comes to our emotional response to things, we have to care. I want you to turn with me to Matthew 25. Matthew 25. We're going to start in verse 31 here. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them from one another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or when did we see you a stranger and invite you in? Or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" The king will answer and say to them, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me." Then, which now it's like, oh, do I want to read the rest of the story? "Then he will also say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, you did not visit me.' Then they themselves will answer also, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you?'" Do you notice those are the exact same questions? The righteous and the unrighteous are asking the exact same question. "Then he will answer them, 'Truly I say to you, the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life.'" I want you to notice here in this story, there are those who showed love to God. They did it by showing love and care for, as Jesus puts it, the least of these my brothers, or the least of these brothers of mine. However, those who did not love God, they did not care. they did not care to help those who were in need, and thus showed their true colors. If you turn with me over to Matthew chapter 5 as well, I want you to note what it says here. We'll start in verse 21. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court, and whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court, and whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. I want you to note here the fact of what he's saying. When we are not following this to the letter that we ought to, this will eventually come between us and the Lord. We sort of have this idea of, well, I don't hate God, I just don't really care about what God says. Now, that may not be for us what's mentioned here in verse 21. But I think sort of we get this idea in our heads that, well, not caring is better than hating. And I don't think that that's true. As soon as I stop caring, I no longer have the love of God. Now, I could also say, if I hate my fellow man, I don't have the love of God in me either. To the end point, I do feel like apathy is perhaps worse than hate. However, at the end of the day, both of them are not love. And so it doesn't matter which one is ultimately worse. It doesn't matter which one is the opposite, because neither one of them is love. Jesus said, you've heard it said that you shall love your enemy and hate, that you shall hate your enemy and love your neighbor. Well, no. Because if I'm hating my enemy, then I'm not loving them. It's the opposite. But if I'm also not caring about those, let's think back to the parable of the Good Samaritan. If I no longer care, if I'm just walking by and not doing anything, not helping those who need help, whether that be spiritual, whether that be physical, I no longer have the love of God within me. This morning, there might be those among us who they don't care what God has to say. And it's very difficult to impress upon you that you need to care. But the reason that you should care, first and foremost, is because either God exists or he doesn't. It's a 50-50. There's no in-between. And if he doesn't exist, then you can leave us alone. We're just going to be here doing our thing because it doesn't really matter, right? Because God doesn't exist. There's no afterlife. There's no determining where I go. So it doesn't matter. Just leave us in peace. However, there is a God, and he has asked for his children, that's all of humanity, he's asked his children to love him, and he's given us reason to love him. And if you think that there's nothing to care about, I think we need to take a long, hard look at what's going on in your life, in the life of those around you, and start to realize how both states, apathy and hatred, are both not in truly loving someone. It's funny that we want to push this idea of loving people, but then we go about the exact wrong way of loving each other. To the point that it's not really love. It's just acceptance. Anymore, that word sort of is synonymous with love, but it's not in reality. Acceptance isn't love. Because what's happening now is we're being apathetic. If I am accepting someone and not asking them to change, I'm being apathetic toward who they are. And therefore, I no longer love them the way I ought to. The way any of us ought to. And so this morning, you need to realize that apathy is not the way that we live our lives. Apathy is a way to find ourselves in a very deep hole. This morning, you really need to choose. You need to choose God. Choose either are you going to love God or are you not going to love him? Whether that's hatred or apathy, I don't really care. Either one is not loving God. This morning, if you feel as though perhaps your feelings of God have swung perhaps more into the apathetic sphere. Because I don't know how many people here are Christians and yet would say that they hate God. But perhaps they're not caring. You no longer care the way you ought to, and thus are not exhibiting the love of God, either for him or for your fellow Christians. If that's true of you, you are still in opposition to God. You are living your life in opposition to him, and that needs to change. This morning, in whatever way you need to come to the Lord, you need to answer this question. I appreciate the question that's being asked here. What shall it profit? There's only one way to profit from this world. And that's the Shema. What we talked about at the very beginning of this lesson. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your being. That's the only way to profit in this world. And if you feel like you need a chance to find that profit again, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.
Not all is gold and silver can make a sinner whole. What shall it profit thee, O man, if thou shalt lose thy soul? What shall it profit a man? What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? The heaping up of riches to many seems life's goal, but in the eager rush for wealth, forgotten is the soul. What shall it profit a man? What shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? This solemn question answer is worldly gain thy goal? Shall it profit a man?
It's good to see everybody this morning. Thank you, Andrew, for your lesson. And I think it makes a good point. Apathy is something to contend with, and all of us got to be engaged. And so